We may need to rename that song, Turn the Lights Back On. You know, we get used to a lot of things that we just kind of forget all the effort that goes into them. And one of the things that's been such a blessing to me in the last couple of years is the church directory. And it's so easy to use that so frequently and then not really think about all the work and effort that it took to put it together and to keep it updated. And so I was using it this week, and I touched base with Chris Craig on Wednesday night, and I just want to express my appreciation to him and the work that's gone into that, because it's so easy for us to just think about all the things that maybe we're thing we need to do, and yet there's so many things that are being done that take effort and time, and that's very much appreciated. I don't know about you, but I could just go on singing this morning. I've enjoyed the singing very, very much. It's been kind of uniquely special today. Back in 2016, there was a fisherman in the Philippines who was out fishing. He threw his anchor into the water. A storm starts to come up, and he needs to get out of there, pulls the anchor up, and he can't get it loose. It's stuck on something. And so in his quickness, trying to get out of there. I can't think of the right word this morning. I'm having lots of trouble. Anyway, he dives down in there, and his anchor is stuck on a giant clam. And inside the giant clam is this picture, is this pearl. That's a pearl, 34 kilos, 75-pound pearl. In 1934, the Pearl of Allah was discovered, and it weighs about 35 pounds or something, 34 pounds, something like this. This guy kept this pearl for 10 years under his bed as a good luck charm. Finally, his house burned down, and the people who came to assist with the fire said, you know, that pearl might be worth something. And it is. It's worth $100 million. This guy found the pearl of great price. That's just the illustration that's there. Probably you, like me, didn't think there could be pearls this size. Of course, obviously that's not in the normal little shape that we think of pearls, but could do any number of things with that particular situation. 10 years it was under his bed. He didn't have any idea what it was worth. And the very thing that he thought it was good for turned out not to be, because it really wasn't a good luck charm in terms of his house burning down. Jesus tells a story, and that's the story we want to look at today. The story is from Matthew chapter 13. Jesus is this incredible storyteller, and this particular story in the NIV is told in 31 words. And just think about how much you know about the story and how many things you can recall by this parable of the pearl of great price. In Matthew chapter 13, verse 45, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. Two things jump out at me from this story. The first one is just that very simple. When he found one of great value, he's looking for pearls. He goes in there or whatever the situation is. And when he stumbles onto this one, he says, wow, this one is incredible. Now, I know absolutely nothing about assessing pearls. Some of you may. I did look it up. It's based on the nacre, which is the material that goes around the center. Thickness, luster, shape, size, color, and blemishes. But the interesting thing is, as a general rule, the overall balance is more important than any single attribute. So what it's telling you there is you have to have an eye for it to be able to look at it. You can't just measure it. You got to know how it all fits together and how it all comes together and what the value would be. You ever been misled on some jewelry? We like to go to Mexico, and Mexico is famous for Mexican silver. All Mexican silver, all that means is that it's sterling, that 92.5 concentration is what that's talking about. But one of the most prolific areas of silver is central, this the north part of central Mexico, and there's so many silversmiths that have been developed through so many generations that the work they do is just literally incredible. But people go down there, and when you're down there, you usually run into somebody who's going to tell you about a great deal he got on some Mexican silver. You know, well, how do you know that it's really 92.5? And he says, well, I got a certificate of authenticity. It's in Spanish. Do you read Spanish? No, I don't. Yeah, are you sure you got exactly what you think you got? About 10 to 12 years ago, we have a ragdoll cat. And that's not our cat. But she looks a lot like that. In fact, she's a little prettier than that one. I'm just a little bit prejudiced. We have one, and Joyce has one, or Johnny and Leslie have one. And I decided I was going to raise ragdoll cats. And so I did a lot of research. I did a lot of studying bloodlines and pedigree and all those kind of things. And I thought I was ready to buy a queen, a female cat that you could raise kittens from. The problem was, I knew everything about these kittens. I knew everything about these litters that were on the way. And as soon as those cats are born, as soon as those kittens are born, the catteries will put out detailed series of pictures for the kittens, these day-old kittens. And I would look at them and go, I don't know exactly what it's going to look like as an adult. Now, when the kitten got to be about 10 days old, it's easy to tell what they're going to look like as an adult. The problem is there's no kittens available at that point in time, in this kind of quality. People who are buying them buy them in the first 2 to 3 days because they're so experienced that they know what these cats are going to look like as an adult. Could I ever get to the place where I could buy them like that? Probably if I spent 20 or 30 years raising kittens, I could get to that place. But there's no way that I can see to actually study to that point. It takes experience. It takes having the knowledge that only comes through practical exposure to get to that place where you can look at Mexican silver and say, yeah, that's Mexican silver. I know what that is. I know the craftsmanship and I know the concentration. It takes that kind of experience to look at an animal and be able to say, okay, this is a this quality, it's a breed quality, it's pet quality. What is the quality that it's actually here? And so many other things in life are based upon our ability to make that judgment call. And you may be sitting there thinking like I was about the cats. Well, I'll never get to that place. And God says, well, come here. I'm going to tell you what to look for. I'm going to tell you the things that are valuable. I'm going to help you find those things. And then what I need for you to do when you find them is to do what the guy does, the pearl merchant in this story. You notice the thing that he does next. Sells everything. He's all in. He's bought everything. He's willing to sell it all so that he can have this one particular pearl. There are so many voices out there that are telling you what your values ought to be. This is important. You go to work and your employer will tell you this job is important. Your employer may tell you this job is the most important. But I have a family. And the message sometimes can be this job is more important than your family. And so you have to begin to make choices. Maybe you have a great hobby. Maybe you play a sport. There's any number of things we can get wrapped up in. And it takes up so much of our time that we start to think that, you know, if I just spend a little bit more time with this, then I could just be that much better. And it just challenges me to do that. And then some other voices start to say, but is this really the way you want to spend your time? When we first moved to Houston, the public golf courses did not take reservations. They simply had a ball rack, and you would put your name on a ball, put the ball in the ball rack, and then the next morning, they'd just release them as your name came up. So there were four of us who liked to play golf. And the only way we could play golf was if one of the group went out there and stayed all night on Friday night to get a ball in the ball rack to get a tee off time on Saturday morning. Well, there was a time when I got, you know, is this really worth it? I mean, look at what's involved in once a month spending all night at the golf course. This is a silly thing to be doing. And constantly these things are put into our lives where we look at it and we say, this doesn't make sense. And God says, come here, let me show you something that's really valuable. I looked and looked and looked for it for this commercial, for this sermon. It's a cartoon of a guy. He's a robber. And he comes up to this guy and he says, give me all your valuables. And the guy looks, takes all his family members and pushes them over toward the robber. Those were the valuables in his life. He didn't go for its wallet. He didn't go for its car keys. He thought in different terms than that. And that's really the message that Jesus is giving us in this particular story. Luke chapter 16, verse 13. They're going to tell you can have it all. The world's going to tell you that you can do everything, but you can't. We know that because of this passage and others of it in Scripture. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. You can't do it. Satan wants us to believe that we can partition our time out in our lives so that we can get adequate attention to all of the things that are important. But at some point in time, those things come into conflict. And then we have to choose. I remember a sports program that had been in trouble with the NCAA. They had had these tremendous penalties handed down to them, and they were announcing their new beginning. They were starting all over again. They had hired this new coach, and he was going to do a tremendous job and all this kind of stuff. And a reporter stood up and said, what if it comes down to quality of sports versus these kids actually being students? And the answer was, well, we'll do the right thing. Well, what is the right thing? Well, don't worry about it. We'll do it when we get there. And that's the way we want to handle a lot of things in life. We know there's going to be conflict between these issues, and we just say to ourselves, well, when it comes down to it, I'll make the right decision. So many of the decisions are small ones, and so many of them start out almost on a subconscious kind of level. We don't really give them the kind of thought that we ought to. You can remember Cortez in his conquering of South America. His troops or his soldiers wanted to go back home, and so he burned the ships. He burned his bridge literally behind him in order to be able to say, hey, we are all in on this. We're totally and completely committed. And that's exactly what the pearl merchant is doing. This isn't about material things. There's all kinds of material things out there. But in order to tell the story, Jesus uses material things to illustrate it to us. And so we look at it and we start to see that underlying story that's there. What do people at the end of their lives really care about? As I've shared with you before, those 2+ years when Joyce was in assisted living, you got to see a whole different structure of values. At earlier times in life, people were impressed because you had a lot of education. Or maybe you had a really important job. Or maybe you had a lot of money or those kind of things. But in those people who are in assisted living, the most important thing is whether you have a family that supports you and takes care of you. Do you have an advocate? Do you have somebody to take care of your needs? Do you have somebody who's there when you're called upon to do that? And actually, the trading stock was, look at the families who are backing this up. That's what it all comes down to. And you hear that old expression, nobody on their deathbed says, I wish I'd spent more time at the office. A silly kind of way of bringing that value back into our head. Jesus says there are valuable things here. And learn from this guy. You're looking for value. When you see it, grab it. Trade everything that you have in order to obtain it and hang on to it. Because that's what my Father has in mind for you. 1 Corinthians 13. Now these three things remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. I've told you this story before. You've probably read it other places. It just fits so well that I want to end with it this morning. This little girl was at the, and the story says it was at the Five and Dime. We don't have Five and Dimes anymore. We don't have Cresses. I guess she probably bought this at Walmart. She bought a set, or her mother bought her a set of costume pearls, little plastic pearls, and she loved them. She wore them all the time. And her daddy started playing this little game with her. And he would say to her, "How much do you love me?" She said, "I love you more than the world. I love you this much. I love you all these kind of things." And one day he just said, "Do you love me enough to give me your pearls?" She wouldn't do it. She loved those pearls. And so from time to time, as their life carried on, especially after devotional at bedtime, he would say, "How much do you love your daddy? Do you love me enough to give me your pearls?" And always she would say, "No, Daddy, I'm going to hang on to my pearls." But one night when he asked, she teared up. And the tears started to drift down her cheeks, and she was off of her neck, and she gave them to Dad. And Dad reached into his pocket, and he pulled out a little box. It was a box of real pearls. And he gave them to her. And the reason that story is so good is it's exactly the situation with our Heavenly Father. He looks at all this cheap costume stuff that we're so enamored with, and he says, "Do you love me more than that? Give me your pearls." And when we finally grow to the place where we can, he hands us back the real thing. And we've achieved what he wanted us to achieve. This morning, if your life needs to be different from the way it's being lived right now, we invite you to make whatever change you need to make. If we can help you privately do that, we'd love to have that opportunity. If you'd like somebody to pray with you, we'd certainly be glad to do that. If you need to know more about how to be a Christian, then we'd love to study with you about that. If you're at a place today where you're ready to be a Christian, we'd be glad to help you with that. Any need, make it known while we stand and sing together.